I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. This morning, we are broadcasting to you from the St. Paul studio. Providing color commentary, we have Father Garrett Burns.
Hello, everyone.
And with the weather, Father Drew Hoffman.
I can't legally complain about my patronal, the patron of my parish, being the name of the studio.
See, everybody wins.
Everybody wins.
We are a community that works together, and it's time you get on the train, all right?
That's going to be the new motto of St. Paul's University Parish. I like that.
Choo-choo.
Choo-choo. I'll have a little conductor hat in the picture, and I like this. Things are really coming together.
I feel
at
like
St.
you
Paul's.
Could sell that at St. Yeah. Paul's. You could get people behind
choo-choo
that.
Choo-choo indeed.
Well, last week, the studio was named after the patron of the parish of Garrett, where he serves at. This week, the patron of the parish, Drew, serves at. I'm sure they're patron of other things. I mean, what is St. Margaret Mary and St. Paul? Are they patron of other things? They've got to be.
Tent makers.
That was your original devotion to St. Paul,
yeah,
right?
That's right. Well, because of my love for the outdoors. Yeah. Yeah, pretty outdoorsy type of guy.
If you don't know Father Drew, that was sarcasm.
Yeah. I'm indoorsy, as the Burns family often says. I'm an indoorsy type of guy.
St. Margaret Mary, she's got to have, Sacred Heart.
Yeah, she's apostle to the Sacred Heart. I'm sure she's got some other ones. I should know that.
I don't know. Calling you guys on the spot.
I don't know Paul's at all.
That's always one of the interesting things with saints, because sometimes they have really weird patronage. Like, I think Claire of Assisi is the patron saint of television, which...
And Isidore of Seville is the internet or something like that. Some Middle Ages doctor of the church. And so
I don't know how they get connected.
Who's in charge of that?
I don't know. There are no rules.
That's our wheelhouse.
Yeah, I like that.
Which sets us up perfectly. There are no rules. So if you were to be the patron saint of some group of people or something, knowing that there are no rules, who or what would you be the patron saint of? Father Drew.
Okay, as with the indoorsy, I'd be the patron saint of hair care, would be one of the things. So yesterday we had a staff kind of happy hour, and it's a ways since my birthday, but we hadn't really had like a very intentional staff get together since my birthday where there could be kind of some fun and things like that. So they brought out what they had gotten me for my birthday, which was a box of the hair gel that I use, but a bunch of different ones. So I'd have like a stack for like the rest of the year, basically, of the hair care products that I use. So it was very thoughtful. They knew me well. And so we talked about me doing some tutorials and things like that of proper hair care and the different stages it has throughout the day, because it changes throughout the day. People don't understand that. And so you have to.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Please help us understand.
So you have to understand like what your day is going to look like. And that is part of the morning routine, knowing how you want it to change throughout the day. And so even I have these headphones on, I don't like it because it's messing up my, I hadn't thought about that when I prepared for the day. And so
poor planning.
No, that's on you guys. But, but again, this Kristen S number 3 is powerful enough to handle whatever comes at it, which could be its motto. I like that. I would make a killing as their spokesperson.
If even, they're listening.
Even on as the conductor of a train, your hair. Right.
With the conductor's hat, I don't like that.
Do you avoid hats?
I have really like strict rules about when I wear hats. There has to be a shower in the very near future if I'm going to wear a hat. Like I would never wear a hat if I have something important afterward, immediately. I wouldn't golf if I had to go straight from golf to an event. I wouldn't golf in a hat or something.
Of course.
Like there, so I'm not an animal. And visors don't really work for me. I'm not a visor guy.
There was a time in my life when I had hair, but you would probably be scandalized at how I took care of it. And in college.
Even when it was long?
Even when it was long.
Down to your shoulders.
Yeah, I had it past my shoulders, and this is, I guess, gross. And when I was in college, I had a different bandana for each day because I wasn't getting up early enough to shower before classes. So you'd have to just put a do-rag on and just have, you know, gross hair jetting out behind.
It's hard for me to even hear of it.
I could give you some tips on how to how to go a whole new direction with your hair care plan. Mine is all about bandanas and hats.
I don't like that. Neither of those words should be used ever in conjunction with hair care. Like an animal.
Yeah, I could use your intercession. I had a lady one time. She was like, yeah, Father, whenever I see you, I just, for some reason, think of St. Francis. And I'm like, I think that's just because I'm like balding and starting to get the tonsure. Like, I don't think it's any of my great poverty or something like that. It's just, I'm starting to kind of look like him because of my hair.
Someone told me once that there's two types of men in the world, men who swoop their hair and men who are self-conscious. And whenever I would say that in public, Father Gale would always go, and Drew's the only man we've ever met who's both. Yeah. So hair is a jokey one. Probably a serious one, I guess, if we're doing that, is college campuses. And I don't mean college ministry, because like John Paul II did college ministry, so that's a superior.
I think you can cut in front of him on this one.
I wouldn't say like college ministry by any stretch of the imagination, but I do love college campuses. Mm-hmm. Like the physical space of a college campus. I spend a lot of time. Like that's one of my favorite things to do as a college chaplain at K-State and Wichita State, is just being on campus. And even yesterday, I was just walking campus and some people I didn't know saw me like, Father Drew, we'll be at Mass for Ash Wednesday. And I've had so many great conversations on college campuses of just walking and being a priest on the campus. And I like going to the library and I like going into the sporting places and I like going to the quiet. I like being as a priest on these secular college campuses, one of my favorite things in the world. And so
that's cool.
Yeah. College campuses get a lot of grief in the modern world for the types of places they are sometimes and things like that. I love college campuses and I love being a part of it.
I would support you for both. So, you know, you can have multiple patronages. Yeah. So both are, and really they blend together. There's a lot of college students that need, you know, help with their hair.
Oh, you wouldn't believe some of the freshman boys.
I know.
They have so much to learn.
Your work is needed.
Yes, I know.
Gare, how about you?
Yeah. I mean, probably the indoors. Maybe to go back to what we were talking about earlier. But what Drew said made me think of, like, when we joke, we talked about NBA basketball and stuff. But I really do love playing basketball and just pick up basketball.
Can't be the NBA.
Cannot be the NBA. I know. I realize. I don't want to. There are no rules except this one rule. Chad is the patron of the NBA. But I was thinking of when you were talking about that, like pickup basketball, because that's a place where I love to go to the Y or just these open gyms and I play. And like people don't know I'm a priest. And then eventually, like you just, you know, it's in between games, you're getting a drink and you get to know them a little bit or they ask what you do. So that's been a cool place for me. Not that people are converting in masses from pickup basketball games at the Y in my interactions with them. Not yet. But I have had some good conversations, and I think that's a place where I like to do that because it's a little less, like aggressive. Or again, I'm not in my clerics, and so it's somewhat surprising, and it's just meeting people where they're at, and I just like to play pickup basketball. So
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
I'd be support that.
That's a good one.
And everyone then, when they would be playing grade school basketball, would have the chain with your medal on it.
Yes, exactly.
That's kind of sick, actually.
Meant to be.
Yeah.
Meant to be. I think my fun one is I'd like to be the patron saint of people with tattoos, just because I think those would be wild prayer sessions. Like when they get to together to talk, those are the conversations, you know, these pious ones. I don't want to leave the glories of heaven for some boring piety. You've got all the great piety you need in heaven, but a gathering of just tattooed, like to the tip of their nose sort of people, that's I want to hear those intercessions or those requests for prayer.
I love the idea of Chad just being like bored in heaven. It's like, there's got to be is there a party somewhere? Is there a social or?
Where are my patron and tattoo people at? We're going to.
Where'd you get that one? Why do you have to get this?
The Feast of St. Chad will be wild, which actually, by the way, just so you know, we are on the eve of the Feast of St. Chad.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Tomorrow's the Feast of St. Chad. It's also Ash Wednesday, so most of the world will be doing Ash Wednesday. Yeah. I will be having a big feast to celebrate
that trumps, sure,
my patronage saint.
And Ash Wednesday. And all those St. Chad parishes around the world will have that as a solemnity tomorrow.
There is a cathedral in Birmingham, Great Britain. Someday I'm going to get there. That's where his relics are at. Birmingham, Great Britain, the Cathedral of St. Chad.
He sounds like a total bro.
That'd be awesome. Like a Catholic fraternity makes a trip to St. Chad's cathedral for a pilgrimage.
He's an amazing saint. He's been a great inspiration to me. World War II, German incendiary bomb falls through the cathedral roof, goes off, but goes off right next to the water pipes. So it's immediately extinguished, saving the entire church and all relics through the war.
Wow.
So, I mean, he did other stuff, obviously, before that. But that's his most recent interesting adventure into the world.
But so, no tattoos that you know of.
Not that I know of. He's 6th century British bishop or Irish bishop, so probably not a lot of tattoos. So he won't mind that I take that.
Good point.
But I think my serious ones, so like if I was going to be a patron of something, I would go with hurting priests. You know, they're out there. The Lord has been very gracious to me. I've been very blessed in my priesthood. I love my priesthood. It is a source of such enrichment and joy. But there are priests out there that are struggling for whatever reason, for their own interior demons or whatnot. And a lot of times they don't feel like they can share that with others because they've got to be the father figure. Or they've got to be the leader. That'd be a patronage I'd like to keep working in, is just being there as an intercessor, a helper for priests who are hurting and struggling for whatever reason. So I can do, you know, serious work in the morning with hurting priests, and then the afternoon I hang out because the tattoo people aren't up in the morning.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's when the hurting priests are making their holy hour. So it's really just a timeliness split of the
really
day.
It keeps you really busy throughout the day.
That's right. I like to be busy about things.
So like a newly retired person who's trying to make sure they have stuff to do all day.
I got pickleball in the afternoon with St. Peter, and then we're going to go to the tattoos.
By 8:15.
Also, should add a caveat, if you are a seminarian for the Diocese of Wichita, read your handbook. It is explicitly mentioned you are not allowed to get tattoos as a seminarian of the diocese. Let it be clear.
Bishop Kemi
wants you to know that no tattoos while you're a seminarian for the Diocese of Wichita.
You will receive no intercession from Father Chad at this time.
There will be zero help, quite the opposite. Well, kind of throwing back to last week's podcast, we were talking about the dangers of looking too much for signs. Today, I want to talk about what I would consider could be an actual sign of a vocational calling, and that's a desire towards the priesthood from a very young age. Now, obviously, it's not foolproof. It's not like every little kid that ever says, I think I'm going to be a priest is going to be a priest. And there's a good number of priests I know that felt that calling later in life. But I would say, and this is completely anecdotal, I've not taken any stats or anything, but I would say the majority of priests experience a sense towards the priesthood when they were a small child. Bishop Kemi, he talks about, you know, from the time he received his first communion, he knew he wanted to be a priest. I don't know if you ever heard Father Lansrath talking about how, like, when he was a boy, he would play Mass with the neighbor, and they would take turns of who was the priest, and his neighbor was Father John Hotze. So
I've never heard that.
Yeah, they were both kids, neighbors, playing Mass as kids, and they both grew up to be priests for the diocese. Now, when I chose this topic, I think I emailed you guys on Sunday. Let's talk about this. And then I started second-guessing myself. I'm like, okay, am I looking too much for signs? Am I looking too much or making too big of a deal out of it? So I emailed you Sunday. I start having these second guesses, and then I sit down for my spiritual reading on Monday morning, and I'm rereading John Paul II's Pastoris Dabo Vobis, and I come across this paragraph, and I felt entirely vindicated. As long experience shows, a priestly vocation tends to show itself in the pre-adolescent years or in the earliest years of youth. Even in people who decide to enter the seminary later on, it is not infrequent to find that God's call had been perceived much earlier. The Church's history gives constant witness of calls which the Lord directs to people of tender age. St. Thomas, for example, explains Jesus' special love for St. John the Apostle because of his tender age, and draws the following conclusion. This explains that God loves in a special way those who give themselves to his service from their earliest youth. So that comes from John Paul II, so I feel a little bit affirmed in the idea that, okay, yeah, this can be an actual sign, if you will. Again, it's not like, well, I thought about I was a priest when I was in second grade, so I have to be a priest, but if as a small child I was thinking a lot about the priesthood, is that the Lord working in my heart? I think it begs the question to give it some consideration. So I remember, like, in your vocation story, Father Garrett, you talked a little bit about drawing that split screen between an NBA basketball player and a priest. Father Drew, did you have any experiences do you remember when, like, the idea first entered into your mind or heart?
Sure. I honestly can't say that I thought about it all that much as a youth. I thought about the idea of it in the sense that I knew that it was a good thing that it existed, but I thought priests were very sad. not from any experience that I had. I had great priests growing up, but I didn't know them terribly well. But they were important. And so it was like a sacrifice men had to make. So I liked serving. I was a server maybe through seventh or eighth grade. But I'm kind of maybe an exception there that I truly did not think about it really until I taught Totus Tuus between my freshman and sophomore years at KU. And I met some young priests that really energized me. And so, maybe this says majority. I'd probably be in the minority and that I didn't have that experience until my college years.
I mean, I remember the split screen, Gare. Were there other experiences as a kid that you recall, or is that kind of the first?
Yeah, that's definitely the first thing. And mom and dad showed us pictures when we grew up, and I don't know if it was a vocations fair day or something like that, but you could like stick your head in the cutout and, you know, picture yourself, took a picture of you as a priest or whatever. So we had things like that, and I think it was somewhere there. But I know going back to that, it was a piece of the puzzle. Again, not a sign that was like, well, I got to do this. But there was something very firm in that because I obviously did not create it. Like there's something about a child that there's no duplicity in them. I could look back and say, okay, when I was 8 years old, there was something in me saying, I want to be a priest. Like that's an untainted desire.
Yeah.
I could go back to it and like be sure about rather than right now, as like I talked about previously, you're in this wrestling match and you're trying to figure everything out and discern everything. Some of that is harder through years of just life experience and sin, frankly, that can maybe make it harder for me to even recognize my desire. So if I could look back and say, okay, as a kid, I know that that was there, that that's something deep in my heart did have a draw and an attraction to this way of life. And that wasn't mature because, yeah, as a 7-8-year-old, you don't understand all everything that goes into being a priest, but there was some deep attraction and desire there that I couldn't just slough off because I knew that that was there from a young age.
I never thought about, but I think you're right on the money in that, as you described it, I think you said the untainted desire of childhood. Because when I think back, like as a child, the things that I thought I wanted to be, almost all of them, I can give a reason why I wanted to be that. I remember as a little kid, I was going to be a telephone repairman. And because the place we went to vacation, that a place that I loved in the mountains of Colorado, always had a telephone and it was broken. It didn't work. And so in my childhood mind, I can point to that. That's why I wanted to be a telephone repairman. I was going to be a tree waterer because I remember my dad. It's a thing, I think.
It's called the rain.
I wanted to be the rain. My dad always planting trees. And that was one of the jobs as a kid he would give me in the yard is to go water trees. So I can, these early jobs that I could think of as a kid, I can point to reasons why very clearly that's why I thought that's what I wanted to be when I grew up. But I also remember as a child, very early on, the idea of being a priest. And I can't tell you why. I mean, we went to Mass on Sunday, and I'm sure I imbibed from my parents the idea that they respected the priest, that we had good pastors, but I don't remember ever talking about it. I don't remember any concrete reason why I can say, well, this is why as 7 or 8 years old, I had this idea. And it really, in my memory, exists, like you described, Gare, as kind of this untainted desire. I can remember as a kid thinking of reasons why I wouldn't be a priest, but I can't tell you why I thought about being a priest. People who know me now don't always believe this, but I was a very shy child. And so that was the main reason, like, I didn't want to be a priest because you'd have to be up in front of people. And I was confident that I would mess something up liturgically and embarrass myself, which was true and has happened on multiple occasions. Not a reason not to be a priest. And so I remember as a kid at 7 or 8 making excuses in my own heart and not telling anyone. I remember, like you were saying, drawing a picture in grade school. And I remember thinking, well, I want to be a priest. I couldn't tell you why, but I don't want to own that. So I drew on my picture stuntman. I'm going to be a stuntman. Because for some reason at 8 or 9, I was still nervous about that idea or it maybe even embarrassed a little bit or afraid of being embarrassed for the same reason. Like I never served. I did not learn how to serve Mass until I was in seminary.
Wow.
Because as a grade school kid, I did it one time and I felt it was really embarrassing, felt I messed up. And so every time I came up on the schedule again, I had a headache or something else. And I never served Mass again until I was in seminary because I didn't like being in front of people. But I think you hit the nail on the head for, at least in my experience, Garrett, that's what it was, is it was an untainted desire of youth that I can't name exactly where it came from. I'm going to have to think about that for a little while.
And I think that's, however a discernment process goes, you have to get to that point that this is not something I made up in my head. And however you get there, you've got to understand it's given from without. outside of you from God himself. This is a gift. Mm-hmm. And so it's not something that even always logically makes sense of just, I made the pro con list and there's more pros on the priesthood side. No, it's like, this is something from outside of me. And yeah, to me, that is, it was a piece of that puzzle for me that there was something before I could articulate it, why I wanted to, that was just there, that I wanted to be a priest. And it's one of the coolest things now, you know, we had Catholic Schools Week and they have one of the days was like dress up as what you want to be and when you grow up. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the coolest, just cutest things to see the first and second graders and that are dressed up as a priest.
It's like, awesome.
That's just awesome. So neat.
And I think that relates to the point you were making there of this vocation coming from outside of yourself. It relates to a question I get asked a lot as vocation director, and actually was a question that was emailed to the podcast. And that is, how do parents and grandparents help foster vocations? And I always start with what you were kind of saying there, Garrett, when they first asked that question. I said, well, first we have to remember, you don't make vocations. I don't make vocations. The vocation comes from God. And so as parents and grandparents look on their kids, there's got to be this recognition that this comes from God. So that all we are doing is fostering or shepherding or stewarding it. But that being said, there are ways parents and grandparents, I think, can help steward or assist a son or daughter, grandson, granddaughter to hear the Lord calling in their life, to hear that invitation. I don't know if you guys have come across that question or have any thoughts on how parents and grandparents can assist there.
Yeah, affirming that, saying things like that, that they'd be a good priest, encouraging them to serve, signing them up to serve without forcing it to feel like it's a requirement. Having priests around, like I shared, that was one of the big things that I didn't really mm-hmm. experience, that I didn't necessarily have a priest over to the house when I was a kid and didn't, I admired the priests a lot, but the first time I saw Father Billinger do a reverse layup, it was like the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life. But there was a lot of things going on, so I didn't have a lot of those experiences. And so the presence of young priests around as much as possible and affirmations about the goodness of the priesthood and how this mm-hmm. you might be a good priest would be helpful, I think.
I forget that Father Billinger was an athlete.
I mean, he was a Division I football player. Yeah, I mean, an incredible high-level athlete.
But he's such a humble, quiet, unassuming person. You forget, like, no, this guy was a pretty impressive athlete in his time.
And every once in a while at C's growing up, he'd pull out some of his old
just
moves.
Just dominate the kids.
And then go back to prayer.
Yeah, I agree with what you said, just inviting priests. Again, that was a big part of our story. We would have the priests over for dinner, so invite us over. Drew and I can't cook, so somebody's got to feed us, so please invite
unless you
us
want
over.
Microwave pizzas with a layer of Fritos in. I am still, like, my heart hurts when I think about that.
Father Garrett just heard my stomach grumble just now. It's 9 in the morning. Like, that's just my whole life, is that my stomach is...
You got to care for your hair. You got to get your eating schedule. You got a lot going on, man.
I think you're right, though, Garrett. For us growing up, we did have the pastor over for dinner a lot. And caveat, pastors are busy. So you'd plan it out maybe 6 weeks in advance, but that was a big thing. We didn't really have guests over for dinner. That's not something we did in our home, you know, aunt, uncle, cousins, whatnot. But the priest was about the only guest I ever remember coming to there. Mom would get out the cloth napkins and the nice dishes and cook up a big meal. And just seeing my parents interact with the priest and enjoy his company and to see that he was a normal guy that also laughed and had funny stories or could help with issues. That was, I'm certain, hugely influential on me growing up.
Yeah, we actually one time, we had the priest over a lot. And one time we had Bishop Jaquels over for dinner at our house. So
and we never scored that high.
Yeah, when was he installed? Do you remember?
05.
05.
Yeah, okay. So.
Because I'm pretty sure.
I would have been in college by then.
Oh, well, yeah, that's I'm sure why it was.
That's why. Yeah, you know.
I'm pretty sure mom and dad just went to the installation and my dad just like dropped a note in and just said, obviously you don't know people here. Do you want to come over for dinner sometime? And I think it took, like you said, 6 to 8 months, maybe even a year before he actually got over. But we always look back and joke. It was like, that was an effective dinner. Like Bishop came into just this family's house for dinner and two priests
got
out
two
of it.
Priests
so like,
out
that's
it.
A
that's
pretty good,
man.
Pretty good.
That would be fun statistics.
Yeah.
Priests batting average, basically going over to people's houses.
I have invested a lot more time and a lot more projects with a lot less fruit than that.
Yeah. So, but I think, like you mentioned, it just humanizes the priest and allows you to see more of a reality to it. And I was thinking about recently, you know, this is, we're mostly talking to people discerning priesthood, but you could apply it to religious life as well. And we're blessed, at least here in Wichita, to have good ministries that do that for women as well, because that's a little bit harder. Maybe you have a sister at school, but then it's just a different relationship than if, like, you sit down at dinner with them or something like that. So with Fiat Ministries, they have these mother-daughter days and trying to get a more just relaxed atmosphere to where you can get to know them. So I think those are great things parents can do.
Absolutely.
Just try to put the kids in an atmosphere where they can get to know them on a human, personal level.
Yeah, big shout out to Fiat Ministries. If you are a young woman discerning your vocation, go to their website, get in touch with them. They do fabulous work. But a big part of it, their weekend retreats, Emily would tell you, it's not so much about direct discernment. It's just being with the sisters and getting to know them and seeing the reality of who they are as people, which is similar to what we were talking about, having priests at the house for dinner.
And that was the big tipping point in my discernment, as I kind of mentioned, is being around priests, even though that happened in college, but being around some of the great priests of our diocese. I remember being around that weekend, that summer, Father Yurok and Father Aaron Spexarth and Father Dan Lormer and Father Michael Linneber and a whole crew of others. Father Dan Dooling, like, we're having fun here, man. We're having a blast as a priest, and you're happy because of your priesthood. That was a cool thing to experience.
Yeah. I was blessed growing up with, we had great pastors. You know, the first pastor that I really remember was Father Dan Spexarth, who is one of the great homilists of the diocese. My mom taught at St. Anne's, which is where Father John Lansreth was first an associate. So he'd come over for dinner. We had a story. My mom still remembers this. We had farm cats. We had like a big litter of cats, 15 cats. And as a kid, I asked Father Lansreth to bless our cats. So he goes out and dutifully, little kid ass, he blessed the cats. Within 2 weeks, they were all dead with ringworm. So don't let anyone in El Dorado, do not let Father Lansreth bless your pets. It is a death sentence.
What a memory.
And then after Father Dan, we had Father Pat York was our pastor really up until I left for seminary. And again, all of those priests came over for dinner. Father Kent Hemberger was then pastor at St. Anne's, and he would come over. And so there were a variety of just really good, joyful, very different in personalities, but priests living their priesthood fully that would come and enjoy dinner with us. I think that can be a huge way to help foster vocations for sons and grandsons, daughters and granddaughters, is having priests and religious over for dinner. I would also recommend, and I think we've talked about this in different ways in the podcast, tell them good stories. You know, if you're reading your kids' bedtime stories, there are good Catholic stories out there that put vocations in a good light or bring the saints to life, or even good movies about that. Tell them good stories. Let them be inspired by the wonders of our church and our history. So I would absolutely recommend telling good stories. Obviously, it goes without saying, pray for them. Not necessarily pray that this person will become a priest, but pray that the Lord's will be done with. And you can tell God, I'm open to my son or daughter becoming a priest or religious, Lord. I would welcome that, but I want your will to be done in their life. So certainly in prayer, and live your own faith. It's going to be so much harder for a child to experience the invitation from the Lord if you are not living your own faith joyfully, and I'd even say strenuously, you know, looking for ways to be stewards in your parish, looking for ways to be active. It's one thing to say, yeah, your son should serve, but if you're not also doing some ministry in the parish, that's not the best witness. That's not the best way to shepherd that. You first lead by example, by being involved.
One other thing I just was thinking of is basically just to support them in almost anything that's, you know, that's at least not sinful, to give them that freedom in appropriate measures. Like, I'm thinking of my own experience of, I went back to it at times in seminary when I struggled with, just because my brother and I are both priests, like, that is an extra a cross for my parents to bear. And so sometimes that was hard, but I went back to, it's a simple thing, but like, I decided not to play football in high school, and not a huge deal. It's actually something I regret, but I think it's something my dad would have wanted me to do. Like, I could see him really enjoying that, just going Friday night to a Bishop Carroll football game and watching his son play. But I told him I didn't want to play. He didn't push me too hard to say, like, or at least to make me feel like I was less, or he was trying to force me into doing it. Again, that's a very small thing when I was a kid, but then I knew when this was going to be a hard thing to tell him, hey, I'm going to go to the seminary. Devin and I might both be priests. That he was going to say, okay, I love you and I support you in that. And I've seen the opposite of that sometimes. You know, I've talked to kids and they're like, yeah, Father, I think I might be called to be a priest, but my dad really wants me to work with him at his job or to follow him and take over the family business or do something like this. And so to give them that freedom in things outside of the faith or big vocation builds that up so they can have that confidence to say yes, no matter what God's calling them to.
And this is for maybe then the young people. Don't freak out if your parents freak out. And this is something I have to talk with the college kids all the time, because their parents will have an initial reaction to something that they want to do. And then maybe a few days later, the parents are, okay, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But the parents are human, and I'm experiencing this as a pastor. Like, I'll say something, and then 48 hours later, it's like, yeah, actually, that's not that big of a deal. That first reaction, and it's hard. I know young people, I know that it's hard to know that your parents are human beings, but your parents will probably freak out about some things and not even say some things they regret, not in like a hurtful way necessarily. Of course, that would be bad, but even like a not all in sort of way. But that's their job, is to be thinking about what's best for you and to be thinking about practicalities. They've been looking out for the practicals of you since you were born. And so to be calm and give it some time and space to breathe if your parents maybe aren't all in on some of these things, or you don't think they will. They'll come around. It'll be okay.
Absolutely. That's great advice. Such good advice. It's a good stopping point. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Our final word today comes from St. John Paul II. He says, "The priest of tomorrow, no less than the priest of today, must resemble Christ." See you next week.